Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
The Solartopia song, and we're back for another hour. Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show here on Progressive Radio Network. Great to be with you all. We got a great show today. We're going to talk first with Molly Basler and Natalie from Los Angeles. We're going to talk about the big climate march coming up tomorrow, Friday, and the strike and all the global warming stuff. And then we're going to be joined by Joe DeMar. Joe, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, Harvey.
Okay, Joe is in Toledo, Bowling Green, rather, and we're going to talk about what's going on in Ohio, which ain't pretty. But, Natalie, you are with the Sunrise Movement. You are a great activist. I've had you on various shows many times. Tell us what's going to be happening this Friday all over the country, I guess all over the world.
Yeah, so I'm also here with one of my fellow hub members, Noah.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so what's going to be happening this Friday is it's going to be a global strike for climate, which is, so youth everywhere are going to be walking out of school, adults are going to be walking out of work, and everyone, the major event that's happening in LA is going to be a rally that's going to start in Pershing Square at noon. And so it's really just our way of all showing that, like, we need to demand for action, and if we all end up disrupting the system by everyone just walking out of where they're supposed to be, then we think we're just trying to use that to put pressure on these people to act.
Well, what do you want people to do? What are you asking the world to do with this global climate march? What is your program?
We're trying to get as many people as possible to come out to disrupt sort of the day-to-day flow of life, to get attention, to show that there are millions of people all over the world supporting this movement, because we need to. Right now, the amount of indifferent people are outnumbering the people who are destroying the climate and the people who are activists combined. And since there's power in numbers, we're trying to sort of break through the indifference and get everybody out here so that we can make a true difference in what's going on, because now is kind of our last chance.
Okay, so what do we want people to do? What is the specific
march
program that we want done?
So what we're asking is, if possible, for students to walk out of school, for students to be striking from school on this Friday, and from the same thing for workers, if they can get out of work, to just walk out, to strike from their jobs, and to also to join us at our main rally. But even regardless of that, the power is in less in the rally and more in the actual act of striking, because workers and students and like the labor that is done by the masses every day is super crucial. And when that mass of labor disappears, it really shows the people in power that change needs to happen.
And what we're asking for individuals is, there's over 2,500 strikes planned in over 120 countries, so find the strike closest to you and participate if you can.
Well, it's fantastic. I think it's an amazing, amazing event. You should be very proud. It's going to have a huge impact. Molly Basler, you are with the, tell us what you're with, and tell us what your demand is. Maui?
Who are you talking to, Harvey?
You, Maui. I'm talking to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The volume is very low. My name is Molly Basler. I'm an activist also. I'm marching on Friday as an activist downtown L.A., so we're bringing a big group down there. So I'm a climate reality leader, and I've created the Green Dream Campaign, which, Harvey, you were a part of on April 27th when we launched it. And the Green Dream Campaign is focused on the Democratic Party, individual clubs, meetings, parties, conventions, all throughout California. I'm asking the Democratic Party to be green and sustainable in every action that we take. And the companies that we do business with need to be green and sustainable, from the paper we get printed at a green printer to the products we use. And I'm trying to get all the clubs to go plastic free, no more vegan options, so there's not so much meat and dairy, organic choices, buying products at farmers' markets, so we're buying locally, supporting the green movement on a grassroots level. And I'm going to go towards the capital, the state capital of our beautiful state of California needs to go green and be sustainable. So we are an example, since California leads the way and is the fifth largest economy. So if we start doing green practices in everything we do, not just, you know, an electric car and going after the fossil fuel, but from the products we buy, where we buy them, supporting Amazon is not a good thing. Supporting plastic is fossil fuel. So just being conscious of that. And so I'm working with R.L. Miller, who's a great activist, and I want to create green unions. That's our big thing, too. Green workers aren't unionized yet. So we've got to, you know, unionize the green, especially coming into the green dream future. So, and I march, and I'm, like, I'll be there on Friday, and I raise my voice and lift my hearts for the planet and all who live here.
Well, Donald Trump is apparently coming to California to tell us that we can't set our own standards. What do you want to say about that, Molly?
Well, I think that's outrageous, and we need, I don't know, you know, I've just been looking into that, of what we can do to stop this. I mean, I know Gavin Newsom, the governor, is trying to, but I mean, it's a federal issue. He's coming in and he's interrupting our state rights, right? So and I don't know the law as well. That's what I'm saying. I need to look into that. So I would say, when is he coming? I mean, we should have a march and protest him, that, because as Natalie said, the Sunrise Movement, I mean, that's how we get things done, is activism is one of the best ways to get, to have our voices heard, especially when we come together. So I need to find out when he's coming, where he will be, and we can do an action around that, because to show him our disapproval, although I don't know if he really cares, but he seems to be impervious to marches. You know, I mean, people have been marching since he was elected, and he just sort of turns his head. But I think it's still good to get out there and lift our voices and hearts and let it be known that we do not want him interrupting in the, you know, our California. We need to, what's it called, risk, when you leave the union?
Secession.
Secession. So, I mean, we need to march. We need to, you know, I mean, it's outrageous that that he's going to turn back. He's turning back all these things, wonderful things we've done for the environment. And it's outrageous that people are just sitting around allowing it. And I hope Gavin finds a way to stand up to him. Is there, well, and Gavin, Harvey, you probably know more the law behind this. Is it possible for the governor to stop the president from doing something like this?
Well, we're going to find out. It's going to go to court, obviously. But California has implemented higher standards for fuel efficiency for automobiles.
Right.
And Trump doesn't want us to be able to do that.
So, right. He's bringing back everything.
He is.
The Clean Water Act, he reversed. He's cut the EPA into pieces. He's gotten rid of all those scientists and moved them to, like, Missouri. I mean, it's so bizarre that the Democrats in Washington aren't completely standing up and walking out themselves.
No, they're a bunch of wimps. I mean, that's the bottom line. My theory is, and I put this in my new History of the United States, that Donald Trump has actually been sent here by an alien race to wipe out the human species so that someone else can come in and take over the planet. I mean, everything he's doing is designed to end the ability of the human race to live on this earth. Joe DeMar in Bowling Green, what do you think about all that?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting, Harvey, that, Trump denies global warming, and he scrubbed it from the federal website, except if you go to the EPA website, there's this huge section on adaptation to global warming. You know, there's this huge thing saying, oh, if we just build enough dikes and we move the city from here to there and do all this stuff that's going to cost billions and billions of dollars and, give lots of opportunities for kickbacks and stuff, that we could do to fight the global warming that doesn't exist. So I think his motivation is money. I think that's his religion, actually. I don't think he's preparing the planet for aliens. At least I hope not.
Well, I don't know.
Hey, you guys, did you listen yesterday? Amy Goodman had Naomi Klein on, who's just written a new book on climate change. And she's so brilliant. She's such a brilliant interview. And she was talking about that all these actions Trump is doing, building, like he wants to build the seawalls and he's putting, immigrants into, these prisons, and that it's really preparing us for the new world of what we're going to have to live in global warming, because when there's more climate refugees, which there will be within the next 5 years, there already are, where are we going to put all those people when lands and people have to go somewhere? So her theory was, found it interesting, that he's actually preparing, that he knows about global warming, and because a lot of his golf courses or whatever his crap is, that they have to build on these coastlines, and so they talk about that. But so he's, all these things he's doing, he's implementing, are things to prepare for the new way of being when the world goes into catastrophic, which it already is, but it's obviously, we know it's just going to get worse and worse, and it's going to happen within the next 10 years, next 5 years, next 3 years, and all this.
Yeah, it's right.
And it's important to remember, though, that all those all this adaptation stuff is ultimately futile, because we don't know where the limits are. We don't know where the sea level is going to stop rising.
Right.
It just got demonstrated down in Louisiana, where they just completed the post-Katrina improvements, raising the dikes, building all kinds of stuff. And all that construction is already too little too late. The ocean has already risen beyond the capacity for that huge, incredible expense. And so it's not going to do any good. And so he's living in a fantasy if he thinks
right.
He's going to profit off of this process. No one is going to profit off of catastrophic climate change.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
It's so amazing that people think that, it's our disconnect also to nature, to Mother Nature, that they think they can manipulate it and control it and win. over the forests of nature, I just find that to be the height of arrogance. You know, instead of adhering to nature and building to nature, and they continue to build in places, like building dikes, they build another one. Instead of saying, Canada just made it a law, you cannot build at certain places anymore. And people are all in an uproar and protesting, but it's because it's going to bankrupt states and rebuilding and down. I mean, it's such insanity. And human beings.
Yes, indeed. It is.
Pardon?
Natalie, do you want to jump in on this from Sunrise?
Hey, sorry, what's the question?
Do you want to jump in on this dialogue? What are you thinking about Trump and climate change?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, obviously, he's not helping, that's for sure.
Basically, all these politicians are lining their pockets with money from the same fossil fuel execs and lobbyists that have been forging doubt about climate science for nearly 40 years just because the fact that what they're doing is destroying the planet is very inconvenient for how deep their pockets are.
And with Trump, honestly, I'm pretty convinced that he's just doing it out of spite. Like, he already has. So, yeah, like,
what's that?
It's partially for money. It's also partially because I'm pretty sure he literally wants to see the world burn. Yeah, so he's not welcome here.
He's not welcome in California. Not welcome on the planet Earth.
Yeah.
So, Natalie, why don't we try to organize a protest for when Trump is in town?
I think he's in town right now, actually. I think it was yesterday and today that he's around. We've just been very caught up because we've been organizing this massive climate strike that we've been helping Youth Climate Strike to organize this with a big coalition of other climate groups, and so yeah, we've been.
No, I understand. We're marching too. Climate reality.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the solutions here. Let's talk about shutting nuclear power plants and shutting down coal, oil, and gas, or what I call King Kong: coal, oil, nukes, and gas. And
Harvey, may I say something really quick?
Yeah.
Okay. I think also we all look towards our politicians to make changes and shut things down when we as consumers also can shut things down by not buying products from the fossil fuel industry, from businesses that invest in nuclear, from businesses that aren't green and sustainable. We are the consumer, and we can shut business is down if we do not buy their product. And that's one thing I do not understand, is we sit and complain we want our politicians to do it when we, the people, what we buy, what we purchase, what we do, our actions we take, create the actions out in the world. So I just want to say that because it's very important that we stop buying products that support fossil fuel. So, I mean, we can all get electric cars and stop buying plastic and then they're going to have to adhere to a green future.
Well, what's a green future look like? Joe DeMar, give us an idea what a green future looks like.
Okay, well, a green future is one that is powered without fossil fuels and without nuclear energy. We're heating and cooling our houses with geothermal energy, where every household is providing enough solar power from their rooftops to meet their own electrical needs. And it is one without plastic. A green future, a survivable future, does not have plastic, unless it's a biodegradable plastic made from, something like corn oil or something that can be reintegrated into the biosphere. A green future is one thing that people don't realize or that people get lost is that a green future is actually a more comfortable future. It's a healthier future. It's one where you actually don't have to give up your creature comforts in order to survive. A geothermal heating, for example, a geothermally heated house has less fluctuation in terms of hot and cold than a house that's heated with gas and cooled with air conditioning in that manner. So I think a green future is a comfortable future. It's a healthy future. And all we need to do is apply the technologies that we already have. We don't need to develop a whole new kind of energy source. We don't need to develop a whole lot of stuff. We just have to shut down the old polluting sources and switch over to the newer clean energy sources.
Okay, I'm good with that. Natalie?
Yeah, so I just actually, going back to what was being mentioned just before about divestment. So I think we're actually, it's been a pretty great couple of weeks in California politics with what's been going on. One thing that just happened, I think it was yesterday, was the University of California Regents Board just voted to completely divest all of their endowments from anything that has a stake in fossil fuels, which is to date like the biggest fossil fuel divestment that has happened in the United States. So that's what the future
wow.
is looking like. For sure. Is
that's pretty good. Yeah,
taking our money out of these companies. And then also, yeah, no, if you want to weigh in on Eland.
Sure. Also, last week we had a big success. Sunrise LA did a rally outside of LADWP because they were considering a project that it was going to be one of the biggest solar projects in the history of the United States. And so we were encouraging them to pass it because it was also the lowest rate. It's going to be the cheapest solar that's ever happened.
Cheapest, any, not just the cheapest solar, but it is cheaper than coal. It is cheaper than natural gas. It is cheaper than nuclear. It is cheaper than any other energy source. It's like, here's something like 2 cents per kilowatt hour.
Exactly. It was a
wow.
really, it's a great deal. And so we had over 40 people speaking in the general comment section, and the Board of Commissioners approved it unanimously. And so that was really exciting.
So yeah, and this is to give a little bit of context on the scale of this. This is a solar and battery power plant that is going to provide something on the magnitude of something like 7% of the electricity for the entire city of LA. So it might be the biggest, I think if approved, the biggest solar battery plant in the United States.
And where is it going to be?
It's going to be, I forget the exact location, somewhere near LA.
It's maybe out in the desert.
Yeah.
Lots of good sun.
Wow.
But yeah, that was a huge, that's a big victory, and that's moving on to city council now, but we are expecting it to go through. So yeah, more stuff like that, more divestment from fossil fuels, getting a Green New Deal to make sure we have a just transition so that people working on, that was another important part of the Eland project, is it included a project labor agreement so that they're working with unions to ensure that people actually get good paying union jobs while working on these solar plants, which is like a really good model of what we want the just transition to be looking like.
Molly, you've been following that. What do you think? Molly? Molly Basil, are you still with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I had my mute on. Sorry.
What's the date?
I mean, the problem is some of these dates are so far out. I mean, like Kevin De Leon's bill, SB 100, is for like 2050, and we don't have that time. DWP seems to also, I don't know what the time is, but it's got to be at least 2030 or sooner, because even 2040 doesn't work. And that's where we've got to get into action to change these dates. And, you know, Naomi Klein talked about this too, that we obviously are activists, we have a real hard time as a species really understanding what's in front of us with the global warming, with the planet warming up. We don't see future, we don't see future disasters. We're incapable of that in our, you know, in our mind, the way our minds are set up. I found it fascinating, and that's why some people, you know, they're lollygagging rather than getting into quick action that needs to be done tomorrow, you know. And like even with the nuclear plants, they're a complete disaster waiting to happen, and Newsom isn't even moving on it, you know, and closing them down and just shutting it down like one full swoop, and then getting the people in new jobs. I mean, it's we make it as difficult as we make it, you know. So that's also frustrating because so many people just are too slow.
Yeah, it's outrageous. All right, let's talk a bit now. Joe DeMar, and stick with us, you California folks, because this is going to all tie together. Joe DeMar in Bowling Green, tell us what's going on in Ohio with the two nuclear plants there and this horrendous AB6 bailout. It's really complicated, so take it from start to finish.
Okay, well, and it's the whole controversy is around House Bill 6, HB 6, which was a bill that originally started out as just as a nuclear power plant bailout for First Energy Corporation. They own two plants. Well, actually, they've divested it to First Energy Solutions, but that's sort of a clone of First Energy. They own two plants, Davis, Bessie, and Perry, on Lake Erie here in Ohio. And so what they are doing is they forced a law through that adds a charge to every Ohioan's electric bill, and that charge goes to the companies that own the nuclear plants, and it also goes to companies that own two coal plants, one in Ohio and one in Indiana. And the reason the coal plants got tossed in was just very simply to buy off the companies like American Electric Power and Dayton Power and Light that had a stake in those coal plants and originally opposed HB6, because HB6 picks winners and losers in the energy market in Ohio. Right now, Ohio has a competitive energy market, and nuclear has been losing. Even coal has been losing. But what this bill does is it adds charges to the Ohioan's bill that bails out coal and bails out nuclear, and it cuts all the funding, the renewable energy portfolio credits, and the regular and the straight out funding for energy efficiency and renewable energy in Ohio. So it very directly cuts out wind and solar and energy efficiency, and instead it funds nuclear and coal. And the process, the battle to get this through the legislature, there were numerous hearings, and everyone in Ohio opposed it. I mean, we're talking 90% of the testimony in these hearings was in opposition, and we had everyone from the Green Party to the Libertarian Party to the Ohio Manufacturers Association to the Sierra Club to the NRDC. Everybody hated it except First Energy Solutions, and the communities that directly get payments from the nuke plants. But one of the proponents, Larry Householder, who was the Speaker of the House, who pushed the bill through the House, he gets massive campaign donations from First Energy, and he used those donations. He's been using those donations to promote House Bill 6. So the bill passed. The governor signed it. But right now there is a referendum effort underway that would, if it's successful, it would put House Bill 6 on the ballot as a referendum, and then the people of Ohio could actually vote it down. They could override the governor and override the legislature and eliminate House Bill 6 in the November 2020 election. However, here in Ohio, it has gotten extremely ugly, because the proponents of House Bill 6, the ones that are going to profit from it directly, don't want to lose that $1.5 billion bailout. And so what they've done is they have begun to hire blockers. And these blockers are essentially thugs. And what they're doing is going and harassing the people that are trying to gather the necessary petition signatures to put House Bill 6 on the ballot as a referendum. And if they spot them at public events, they show up and they surround them and they try to make sure that nobody gets to the petitioner without going through a blocker first.
They're yelling at people who are about to sign the petition, screaming out lies, saying, don't sign that. You're giving Ohio's grid to the Chinese. They've done a statewide mailing to all the registered voters, claiming that this whole thing, this battle against House Bill 6, is a battle to give our grid, Ohio's grid, to the Chinese. And it's a completely baseless accusation, and they don't even bother to justify it or support it. The only thing they say is that one of the funders of the petition effort is a natural gas company, and or a natural gas electricity generating company, and one of a dozen banks that funded one of the natural gas projects from that company was a Chinese bank. The other dozen or so were from all over the world, Switzerland, France, lots of U.S. banks. But somehow having one Chinese bank give a loan to one plant for one of the people funding this petition effort somehow means the Chinese are going to run an extension cord from Beijing and suck away all of Ohio's power. So it's really gotten ugly, and the petitioners only have till October 22nd to gather 270.
Guys, I have to leave the line for a minute. Keep talking. I have to take this call.
Okay.
Go ahead.
To gather 270,000 petition signatures, and it's a huge battle. There's petitioners going out all over Ohio. There's blockers going out all over Ohio. In addition to these mailings, these horrible, misleading mailings, they're also running these television commercials. And the television commercials are every bit as paranoid and inaccurate as the mailings. And they show pictures of the Chinese premier and the Chinese flag waving in the background and saying, do you want to give Ohio to China? And it's just a terrible situation.
Isn't there, what about the opposing, the people, you know, isn't there an opposition to these blockers and this that can, you know, then do a counterattack? I mean, I don't like to use that word attack because I think the more, you know, we say that it creates energy, it doesn't create good energy, but like to go against them and lift the voice for the green, to educate people that this isn't true. I mean, and how can people actually believe that Ohio is going to be sold to China? I mean, it's so interesting how people are so quickly to be instilled with fear and believe the guys that are bad for the environment.
Well, my impression, and I'm just going off what I see personally here in Ohio, is that it's only about 20% that are buying it. That about 20% are saying, oh, man, it's in a postcard that came by my mailbox. It must be true. Then there's about 30-40% that understand the whole thing is a hoax, that it's lies, that this is a gross exaggeration. Some of those people are very eager to sign the petitions once they hear, oh, House Bill 6, yes, let me come sign that. But then there's that section in the middle, the remaining 30-40%, that because there's controversy, because there's two sides, and they're hearing two sides, just want to back off and not make any decision and not take any action. And so it makes gathering the petition signatures very difficult. And I think that the forces that you're talking about, they're the ones trying to get the petition signatures. That's what has to happen by October 22nd, or HB 6 goes into law, goes into effect, and First Energy gets their $1.5 billion, and the coal companies get their bailout, and wind and solar essentially lose all their funding in Ohio.
Yeah, but do you have in Ohio, is there a strong green activism group that can you know, go up against these people who are supporting this bill to go through and then, you know, create opposition, create a protest, create, you know, get the people riled up, go door to door if necessary,
have town halls?
Well, I think that effort is starting to coalesce, but I mean, it gets a little problematic if you've got people gathering petition signatures, then you've got blockers blocking them, and then you've got more people trying to block the blockers. it gets very
sounds like a board game. No.
Yeah, I mean, this is very much dollars versus democracy, because the polls, when HB 6 passed, showed that 3/4 of Ohioans opposed HB 6. And as I said, everybody across the board opposed it except First Energy and their immediate allies in this. There's starting to be some response from civil society, like the Sierra Club starting to do some stuff in Ohio in support of it, but it's very difficult to get going.
I find it so fascinating that, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans and, you know, the fact that there's this existential threat to our existence, and that there's a group of people that are still so stuck. They're so afraid to let go of to me, it's all about evolution. Like, there's some of us who are evolving and moving forward, right? And moving into a green way of living and accepting changes to adhere to how we are to survive. That's what animals are supposed to do. They adapt to their environment. And then there's some who are not willing to evolve, and they want to stay stuck in the dirty energy. It's so fascinating to me that some of us, you know, just move forward and accept and know what's the best way. And then there's these people who are still locked into coal and nuclear. And I mean, it seems so archaic and so barbaric to me. It's the fact that we
What I call them the obnoxious minority, because they are a minority. It's always important to remember that the majority of Americans and the majority of the people in the world understand the need to move on. But this
right.
obnoxious minority, they're the ones that yell. They're the ones that jump right to insults. They're the ones that really aren't interested in dialogue. They're just interested in domination. And so it's a social kind of quandary that we're in, because the loudest and most obnoxious and the ones that are wrong are the ones that are setting the policy right now. So what has to happen is the majority has to take back policy.
So yeah, so the majority has to get louder, so to speak, right? I mean, we have to stand up. Like, they always joke, the Democrats are always so polite, and and Republicans are yelling and screaming. So I mean, we, not that we have to emulate that, but you know, we do have to have a louder voice. And but that is true, the majority is evolving and moving forward and wants to move forward, and then there's this
minority. That's what I call them. So that's what's so hopeful about this climate strike. It's people actually getting loud. Are the climate strike folks still with us on the line?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. So how are you guys going to get loud? How are you going to get beyond the group that, you know, already believes the way we believe, and reach out to those people that don't know the seriousness and don't understand the need to change as urgently as you do?
I mean, that's a huge part of what this is about, is attention, is sort of trying to wake people up, because I think it's going to be hard not to notice when so many people are out there doing this, and it's going to get a lot of news coverage. So hopefully that will encourage people to start taking this seriously.
And I think also, to add to that a little bit, I think part of the reason why we're doing this work is because
I'm a climate reality leader, and I was trained by Al Gore. And so what we do
can sometimes be,
and also with my green
very
dream,
noticeable.
If we do presentations, like
hold,
I'm
hold
doing
on,
one,
on.
I just, pardon me?
We've got two people. We've got two people talking at once here. One person just talked about being a climate leader, and then someone else can chime in after that.
Yeah, I was just saying that in the Climate Reality Project, we go out and we give presentations. We also are activists, and we march and lift our voices, but we go to businesses, and like I go to schools and churches, and I go to I go and talk about green living wherever I go, and I give people direct actions they can take to go green. So I am, pardon me?
So that's great. So now, did the other gal jump in who was talking earlier?
Natalie. So I was just saying that I think part of the reason, because for the specific tactic of the climate strike is, for example, like if you're a high schooler and you come to school one day and you realize that half of your classmates are gone, regardless of what your views are, and these classmates, most of them have been talking about this. So it's a way to kind of give people, like, a thing to talk about, a thing, hey, you can do this one action. And for those who don't show, it's sort of, if half your class is gone, you're like, oh, wow, like, I'm in the minority. I'm missing something big. Things are happening right now. And that's sort of really noticeable. If someone really crucial in your company is missing for a day, you're going to notice that. And you're going to be like, wow, if this person is doing it, maybe I should be doing it too. And it really raises awareness of just how serious this is, especially when it comes to workers. Like, these people are willing to sacrifice a whole day's worth of pay just to be out in the streets trying to fight for something. I think it's a really good way of amplifying your message.
Well, it sounds great to me. And what we're asking for, of course, is the total abolition of nuclear power, the total abolition of fossil fuels,
yes,
and a complete conversion to renewable energy. We also have to deal with plastics. We have to deal with recycling. And to me, the number one cure...
Food, also food. Food production.
Well, tell us about food, Molly. Talk to us about food.
Well, meat and dairy industry is, you know, a huge factor in climate change. Deforestation. Look at what's going on in the Amazon and Brazil. They're clearing that for cattle. Cattle produces methane. Then we feed, we could be feeding the planet with the corn we feed to livestock. It's a filthy way to also raise animals. It pollutes the water. I'm also an animal activist and a vegan. I don't wear animals, I don't eat them, and I've been a vegan about 10 years. So animal production, you know, I'm sure as a species, one day we will not eat animals because it's very barbaric, but as long as we are, if they're in small family farms, that's a whole different thing. But the meat and dairy is part of the fossil fuel, which is part of the pharmaceutical. Because the pharmaceutical company sells the meat and dairy tons of antibiotics to give to the animals. People are eating these animals, getting sick. The pharmaceutical gives them drugs. I mean, we live in a country that makes money from killing us and the planet and animals. I mean, it's so outrageous. It actually, when I talk about it, it just makes me sick. We're a country, and that everybody just buys into it and goes along as business as usual and buys their steak and their this and that and continues to support companies. Billion-dollar industries, the richest industries in our country, are the ones that are killing the planet and all of us. Don't you find
that? What are we going to do about it?
What am I going to do about it?
What are we going to do about it?
Pardon me?
What are we going to do about it?
Well, we have to vote in. We, as consumers, need to stop supporting these companies. We need to be conscious and change the way we do things in every aspect. That's what I mean. I wrote, there's a Democratic club this weekend that's having a fundraiser. So I'm making sure it's green and sustainable.
and then talking about this to everybody. So we go on a grassroots level, and then we have to vote in green and sustainable politicians and hold them accountable. So if you see a politician who pulls up in a big Escalade SUV, fossil fuel, go up to that politician. If they're drinking out of a plastic bottle, say something. You know, Autumn Burke, Ben Allen, Senator Ben Allen tried to pass SB 54 a couple of days ago. It didn't pass in the Senate because it was plastic. It was regulating single-use plastic here in LA because Ben Allen knows how, I mean, we're gonna suffocate on plastic. And it didn't pass. And so I called, you can get a list of the politicians who voted against it. And I talked to Senator Allen and Sam Liu, his chief of staff, and they said, you must, you know, when we as activists on the ground need to go up to these politicians, go to their office, make phone calls. Like Sunrise Movement sat in Nancy Pelosi's office. I thought that was brilliant. We need more of that. And, you know,
I have to jump in a little bit here, Harvey, because...
yeah, go ahead.
You know, I'm a green, you know, literally a green political party member, as opposed to a Democrat. And I personally believe that having a party that has clearly stated principles like ecological wisdom, the way the Green Party does, is a necessary part of that, of electing the green politicians.
Yeah, that's true, yes.
Because without those clearly stated principles, every issue becomes a question of relative benefit versus relative loss. And we're beyond the point of that kind of nicety, of that kind of negotiation. We simply have to stop putting carbon in the air. We have to stop building these nuke plants, which are going to pollute the environment with nuclear radiation. We're past the point of relativism in environmental politics.
Right, that's
and
true.
So that's why I would, you know, I would urge people, if you've got Greens or you know, I believe the Democrats are not the only solution here. I think the Greens are part of the future solution. And that's being proven true all over the world, where once you get Greens in power, in office, they are the ones, those are the countries that are making the biggest changes, the most radical shift towards a green future economy. So just right. Had to toss that in there.
No, that's good. That's true. That is true. I didn't think of that. So that is true. I should join the Green Party.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We're having a great round table here. Natalie from Sunrise, Molly Basler from the Green.
Dream.
It's not, what's that?
The Green Dream Campaign.
Green Dream. I keep wanting to say the Green New Deal. And Joe DeMars from the Green Party in Ohio. And, of course, in California here, we have this horrendous issue. We cannot get the governor to inspect the Diablo Canyon nuclear plants, which we know are decayed. They are embrittled. They are cracked. And they will crumble with the first earthquake. And all of us here in L.A. live in absolute terror of the Diablo Canyon nuclear plants, and we can't get the governor to do anything. I mean, what are we going to do about that, Natalie?
Let's go protest in Sacramento.
Yeah, I mean...
All right.
Yeah. Got to have the people power.
Well, we have a petition that's circulating with some very famous people who have signed on. And, you know, we just got to keep at it and get this done, because if we don't, we're all toast, as they say.
Hey, Harvey, Gavin has turned to be such a wimp. I thought he had all promised you and a few other activists around the nuclear plant that he was going to shut it down. Didn't he give a date even?
Well, yeah, the date is 24 and 25.
Okay, too long,
There was a deal signed to shut Diablo Canyon in 2024, and 2025, but that's too far off. You know, we can't wait 4 or 5 years for the San Andreas Fault to go off. If the San Andreas Fault goes off and reduces those plants to rubble, you know, a radioactive cloud will come pouring down to Los Angeles and we're all dead.
Yep.
So,
no,
you know,
I agree. We should go to up to Sacramento and sit in and the Capitol and do what you guys did at Nancy Pelosi's. And if we have to sit there for 2 days, I'll do it. If you know, let's do that. Let's carpool up there.
Absolutely.
So we can talk about that after.
Yeah, we should do that. Joe DeMar in Ohio, what do you think is going to happen with this referendum?
With HB 6?
Yeah.
I really don't know. At this point, it's too early to make a prediction that the petitioning is ramping up. The blocking is ramping up. The issue is really polarizing Ohio because a lot of people are seeing these horrible ads and immediately go into one poll or the other. One thing, though, that we can take some pride in is that the original HB 6 gave a lot more money to the Dukes and than the version that we're having now. So they cut back on what they didn't get everything they asked for, and it was supposed to have been a done deal already, but it isn't. And so continuing the fight is forcing them to spend more resources, and it's making the whole thing less profitable for them. Whether or not they're going to win in the end, but fundamentally, it's a bad business decision. Fundamentally, they're fighting for a decision that is hurting their business because they've committed to the most expensive form of energy. So even with their bailout, they're going to be continuously losing money by trying to prop up these crumbling old plants and by exempting these coal plants from pollution laws, because they're very old coal plants, the most polluting in the country, in fact. And so continuing to pursue that failing business model is hurting all these companies, when if they just switched over to the wind and the solar, they would actually make more profit. So how is it going to ultimately end up? Ultimately, wind and solar are going to win. The question is, how much pain and suffering is there going to have to be before they win?
Okay, we're almost near the end of the hour. Joe, it's great to talk with you from Ohio, and Natalie and Molly in California. Molly, what's the next step here in California? What are we going to do here to get the... Well, first, let me give you a chance. Natalie from Sunrise, how do people get a hold of you?
So, yeah. You can, so Sunrise Movement Los Angeles, you can find us on pretty much any social media site if you search that. It's also a lot of things. It's on Sunrise MVMT LA. Sunrise Movement LA, you can search us wherever. Sunrise Movement Los Angeles at gmail.com to get in touch with us, or just message us on some social media source. And yeah, or even better, come to the strike on Friday at Pershing Square at noon and find us.
All right. Okay, very good. Molly Daisler?
Yeah, hi. So you can find me at greendreamcampaign.com. Go to the website. It's a great website. You can learn how to live green and sustainably. If you want to volunteer, let me know. You can email me also at mollybaisler@greendreamcampaign.com. And I will also be at the strike Friday as an activist with the Climate Reality, my fellow Climate Reality leaders. So I will find you, Natalie, at Pershing Square, so I'm excited about that. And just as much action as every person can do, it's important to move forward together. And don't support companies that are hurting the planet and people and animals. You know, support what is good and right for all.
Okay, Joe DeMar.
My website is Joe DeMar, that's DEMARE, for a greenfuture.org. So that's Joe DeMar for a greenfuture.org.
I just Googled you, Joe.
Oh, thank you.
All right, you guys. These have all been fantastic. It's been a great show. We got to shut these nuclear plants down, get ourselves to the Green Dream here, the Green New Deal, the Green Party. We got to win this referendum in Ohio. God knows it's really complicated. We got to get Gavin Newsom to get into the Diablo Canyon nuclear plants and see what's really going on there. Thank you to the crew in New York, and thank you, everybody, for listening in. This has been the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. And we'll see you next week in Solartopia.
Next week, go green!
Did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on